Welcome to the Deep Dive. If you're a landlord in California, well, you probably know things have changed. A lot.
Mm-hmm. Especially around evictions.
Exactly. The Tenant Protection Act, or TPA, and then newer laws like AB 2347 and SB 567. It's a different ballgame.
It really is.
So today, we're zeroing in on the legal risks for landlords in this new environment. What do these laws really mean when it comes to evictions?
Yeah, what are the pitfalls?
Our mission here is to pull out the absolute must-knows about just cause evictions, the tricky notice requirements, documentation, procedural shifts. Basically, how to stay compliant and avoid trouble.
That's a great focus because the shift is fundamental. We've moved away from, you know, simply being able to end a tenancy easily. Now it's heavily regulated.
Which means more chances for a landlord to make a mistake legally.
Precisely. More hoops to jump through, and each one is a potential legal tripwire.
Okay, so this just cause standard, that's really the heart of it, isn't it?
It absolutely is. It dictates why you can evict, and it splits into two main types.
Right. What are they?
So first, you have at-fault causes. This is about something the tenant did or didn't do.
Okay, like what specifically?
Think the obvious one. Not paying rent. Or breaking the lease in a significant way, maybe an unauthorized pet, causing major damage.
Uh-huh.
Also, illegal activity at the property. Refusing to let you enter legally when required. Or refusing to sign a basically identical lease renewal. Things like that.
Seems straightforward enough, but I imagine getting the details right still matters.
Oh, absolutely. Documentation is crucial even here. Proving the violation clearly is key to minimizing your risk.
Okay. And the second category, that's no fault.
Correct. No fault evictions. And this is often where landlords face, let's say, more complex risks.
Why is that?
Because these reasons aren't about the tenant's behavior. It's things like the owner or a close family member wanting to move in.
Oh, the owner move in. I hear that one's gotten trickier.
Definitely. SB 567 really tightened the rules. It specifies which family members qualify, and they generally need to move in within 90 days and plan to stay for at least a year. Plus, you need proof.
Proof of intent.
Huh.
Wow. Okay, what other no-fault reasons?
Substantial renovations are another big one, but you can't just say you're renovating. You typically need approved permits.
Right. And don't tenants sometimes have a right to come back?
Yes, often they do, especially now after SB 567. If the work isn't actually completed, as stated, you usually have to offer it back to them. Other reasons include pulling the unit off the rental market entirely or complying with a government order to vacate.
Each sounds like it has its own specific requirements and potential risks if you miss a step.
Exactly. You have to follow the specific script for each reason, or the eviction can be challenged.
Now, does this just cause stuff apply immediately when a tenant moves in?
Ah, good question. No, there's a time frame. Generally, these TPA protections kick in after a tenant has lived there continuously for 12 months.
Only 12 months.
Well, or if tenants were added later, it can be 24 months before all tenants are covered. Before that threshold, the rules can be different, but once they hit that mark, you need a just cause.
Okay, let's pivot to the eviction notice itself. I've heard that getting the wording wrong is a huge risk.
It's probably the most critical piece of paper. The notice has to clearly and accurately state the specific just cause reason for the termination. Vague language. Wrong reason cited.
The whole thing gets tossed out.
Very possibly, yes. You could end up back at square one, facing delays and more legal costs. It's a common and costly mistake.
And for no-fault evictions, are the notice requirements even stricter?
They are. You need more than just the reason. For substantial renovations, for instance, you generally must provide copies or evidence of the permits along with the notice.
Okay.
For an owner move-in, you usually have to state the name and the specific relationship of the person moving in. And again, SB 567 narrowed who qualifies.
And there's relocation assistance too, isn't there?
Yes. Absolutely crucial. For any no-fault eviction, the landlord must typically either pay the tenant 1 month's rent as relocation assistance or waive the final month's rent.
And if you don't?
Big legal risk. You could be sued, owe damages, potentially have the eviction overturned. Failing to handle relocation assistance correctly is a major liability.
Now tell us about these recent laws, AB 2347 and SB 567. How do they add to the complexity and risk?
Okay, so AB 2347, which impacts things from 2025, changes court procedures. Tenants get more time to formally respond if you file an eviction lawsuit, 10 court days, maybe 15 if served by mail.
So things might take longer initially.
Potentially, yes, for the response. But it also speeds up hearings for certain tenant motions, and there are new rules about default judgments. It changes the court timeline dynamics.
And SB 567, which is already in effect.
That one, as we've touched on, really beefed up the requirements for no-fault evictions. The big ones are the stricter rules for owner-family move-ins, documentation, residency requirements, and the obligation to genuinely complete renovations and offer the unit back if you don't. It closes loopholes landlords might have used previously.
So putting it all together, tenants seem much more empowered to fight evictions now.
Definitely. They can challenge based on an improper cause, errors in the notice, failure to provide relocation assistance, not following the specific rules for owner move-ins or renovations. The list is longer now.
And the consequences for landlords who get it wrong. What are we talking about?
It can range. You might have to pay the tenant's attorney fees, reimburse relocation costs, even if you initially paid them, pay damages. Mm. In some cases, the court could even order you to let the tenant move back in.
Wow. Okay, so reinstatement of the tenancy is possible.
It is. The overall goal of these laws seems to be balancing landlord rights with stronger tenant protections, reducing arbitrary evictions, and making sure landlords follow the letter of the law.
So the bottom line for California landlords listening seems crystal clear. Understanding the TPA, AB 2347, SB 567, and meticulously documenting everything. It's not just good practice, it's essential risk management.
Absolutely essential. There's very little room for error now.
Which leads to our final thought for listeners. Given these major shifts, what's the single most proactive step you as landlord can take right now to ensure you're compliant and maybe even foster better tenant relationships amidst these rules?
That's the critical question to ponder. Proactive compliance is key.
Some real food for thought there. If you do have specific questions about navigating these laws for your properties, you can reach out to Darren at M&M Properties. The email is digital@mnproperties.info. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.